very common chant they like to say. It goes something like J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Garrett Wilson, wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing.
There is no way.
Hey, it's a part of the script. Do it again.
Listen, we love you. We want it as badly as you do. We care about it as badly as you do. We're as pissed as you are. But we're asking you, I'm asking you, stick with us, to believe in us, to start manifesting positive things, not thinking about what could go wrong.
It's draft week here on the Jets Way podcast. Jake and Lorenzo, of course, joined by our good buddy, NFL draft analyst Connor Livesey, with his fourth or fifth year of the draft guide.
I think I did my first one in 2020. So 2020, 21, 22,
yeah, four. Fifth one. Okay. Yep. But great stuff as always, Connor. Make sure you go get a copy. It's only $7, the best $7 you could spend. Pretty soon, we'll be at Loaves of Bread for $7. But for now, this is a much better bang for your buck, Connor. Thanks as always for joining us in the draft guide this year. You excited for draft week?
Oh, dude, I'm pumped. Always a fun and busy weekend. But kind of it's always satisfying, I guess, when it comes and goes, because you kind of see your work. You know, you get to determine how close you were to the NFL, I guess, to a certain extent, but also, you know, you never know how your actual takes play out until you're in year three or four, but it's always satisfying to kind of have it come and go and see what happens, and it's always exciting, and just the unknown is so fun with the NFL draft. There's really not much like it other than other sports drafts.
Well, for Jet fans, it's been anything but satisfying for the better part of our fandoms, but maybe this year will be a good one. Last year was The year before that, probably the best one in their franchise's history, certainly in our lifetimes. But I'm not going to spoil too much of the secrets of the draft guide. You got to go make sure you get a copy. But there are some pressing Jet questions, and we want to start off first with the mock draft that you put together. And I think you can imagine just by talking with you last time and then obviously on Twitter, there was a smile because I saw that Brock Bowers was the pick at 10 for the Jets. Take us through that and how you think Bowers can fit in with this team.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't love the fit with Bowers with the Jets just because of, you know, Nathaniel Hackett hasn't had a ton of success with tight ends throughout his career, but I do love the fit with the Jets if you take that out of consideration. Like, if you can tell me that Nathaniel Hackett's grown, he's figured out how to use a newer age tight end, move him around a little bit, then I like it, because I think he fits in really well with the way that Aaron Rodgers likes to play football. It just doesn't fit in great with how Nate Hackett has really done a lot of things throughout his career, but Nathaniel Hackett hasn't really dealt with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and maybe somebody that can make up for some of his flaws as a play caller and designer with the tight end of Brock Bowers caliber.
Yeah. And I definitely wanted to talk more about Bowers. I know he's been mocked to the Jets a lot, as well as like a guy like Roma Dunze, but for the audience, like, can you talk more about like what Brock Bowers needs to do or become better at to succeed in the NFL, especially in his first year?
I mean, it's not so much that he lacks any sort of like skill set or trait even at the position. It's just kind of like he's undersized. You know, he's not this 6'6", 255, 260 pound like inline guy who's going to just dominate as a blocker and go out and run these, you know, routes too. Like, he's a great route runner. He's athletic after the catch. He's got athletic upside. He didn't test this offseason, which I think it's crazy that people are like questioning how good of an athlete is, because you can just turn on his tape and be like, yeah, the dude's a pretty freaky athlete. Even though he's not a huge guy, he's still a big dude as a skill player. Again, I don't think he's a guy that you want lining up in line 100% of the time, because I think that takes away from what he does best. But I think he's a very good, you know, get in the way blocker, where he's going to sustain his block long enough to allow the running back to clear the hole and get into the second level. He's not going to be a guy like George Kittle. You know, I compare him to George Kittle just because it's tough to find a comparison due to his size and the way he wins, but he's not a blocking comparison to George Kittle where he's just pancaking dudes. But I think he can be effective, just as effective as George Kittle is as a blocker. He's just going to do, feel, and look a lot different in the way that he does it than a guy like George Kittle. But the routes, the athleticism, the yards after the catch ability, I think is what he brings to the table, and can do that at a, you know, Pro Bowl you know, in year three or four as he develops an all-pro caliber level consistently in the NFL.
Yeah, I think we can all agree here that Bowers or Odunze, they're both awesome, can definitely help the Jets out as pass catchers. I wanted to talk about your number 17 player. Kind of seems to be the flavor of the week for the Jet fans that don't want to go pass catcher. They want to go offensive lineman. Troy Fatanu, offensive tackle slash offensive guard out of Washington. Take us through Fatano's rise throughout the NFL draft, because this was a guy that was not being mocked in a lot of first rounds in the beginning of this process, was just recently flagged for a knee injury. And I think a lot of Jet fans really gravitate towards Fatanu because there's Elijah Vera Tucker, who has not been able to stay on the field. His fifth year option is coming up, and AVT obviously has that versatility to play guard or tackle similar to Fatanu. What do you like about Fatanu, and are you concerned a little bit about the medicals that have just recently been flagged?
I mean, I know there's been a little bit of talk there about the knee injury, but I think he's just it's nothing that I mean, I feel like you can pull some sort of injury out of almost every prospect coming in. You know, there's so many dudes like Peyton Wilson this year who's double-digit surgeries coming in the NFL. Like, that's more of a medical concern for me. If a guy's just, you know, had some, you know, had a meniscus tear or something like that, it's like, I feel like modern medicine nowadays, you can come back from that stuff a little bit better than you used to. But, no, I mean, Fatana's probably for me, I mean, just the best just overall mover in this class from a footwork, core strength, just being able to get into the second level. His just footwork and pass protection, I think, is like elite for a guy of his size and build, because he doesn't have this, like, you know, sad for me, good for you guys, Tyron Smith build, where he's just like a rocked up dude. It looks freakish. Like, he's a pretty thick looking guy, you know, like he kind of looks almost sloppy in the body, but he moves so easy and he plays with the power, the anchor that you want in those guys. And like I said, he's got a bigger frame to him. So it doesn't always look the cleanest, but he's just such a fluid mover, for a guy of his size. He's, you know, got pretty decent length. I think that was one of the questions coming in. People didn't know how well his arm length would measure out, but he came in with pretty decent length. But his athleticism and fluidity skills as a run blocker, pass protector, his size, his length, I think he's a really, really, really good left tackle option, but might be able to slide in, play guard, and be, you know, that all pro level talent that we were talking about with Bowers. Just, I think he offers a much higher ceiling at guard, but the tackle position for me is just so valuable that I'm going to give that guy the opportunity to play tackle. And if it fails, then I'll move him inside to guard. But I don't think he's going to fail at tackle. I think he's got, you know, Pro Bowl level potential as a tackle and then all pro level potential as a guard. So it's kind of like, where do you need him most? Let's put him there.
Would you say he has the most versatility among, like, the first couple tackles that you have on your board?
You have Fawaga there, too.
For me, it's probably going to be Graham Barton. Just because I've seen Barton play center, and obviously, you know, that transition from tackle to guard is going to be easier than the transition from tackle to center. And I've seen him play center as a freshman at Duke. So I feel like Barton is a true five position guy. Like, you could draft him in the first round. You could play him at left tackle. He's got the movement skills and athleticism to move over to right tackle. He's, you know, projected to play guard for a lot of teams. And some people saw his tape as a center with his movement skills and athleticism and size and went, we think he could be an all pro level center. So I think Barton for me is the most versatile guy in this class on the offensive line, which is why I have him graded where I do. But him and Fatanu were like neck and neck as far as that versatility. And the thing I love about both those guys, I think both of those guys have high floors too. A lot of times when you talk about versatile guys, you worry about their floor, you worry about them busting. But I don't think these guys neither of these guys have like a high ceiling, low floor to them. I think they're both high floor prospects that have a high ceiling also. And I think that's what makes them so valuable, because they can play multiple positions at a high level without, you know, I'm not saying they might not need a year to adjust. I feel like we see that with a lot of dudes. You know, the Andrew Thomas from the Giants started off rough in year one, and he's turned into one of the best left tackles in football. So they might need a year to kind of get their feet wet and get everything underneath them. But I think, you know, by year three, four, five, you know, Graham Barton and Troy Fatanu could be two of the best offensive linemen in the NFL. Honestly, I think their ceiling is that high.
Wow. Well, going through your rankings of all the position groups, right? And I'm looking at your top guys. I think the one that stood out to me the most was the running back position. All right. Bucky Irving out of Oregon. Don't really see him. You don't really, I'm just being serious. All the other rankings that I see, you don't see him as obviously the quarterback position. So we talked about that last show. The Jets not taking quarterback in the first round. I don't want to really go through that. But Bucky Irving, the Jets could be in the running back market. This is a guy where, you know, he could be a late day two, maybe early day three guy. He's not, I haven't seen many other rankings with him at the top of the list. What separated him from the rest of the pack that you would see elsewhere?
So he's the one guy that's either going to make me look very smart or very stupid in this process. I just love you. If you watch, you avoid everything that happened this offseason, the testing, and that's really what killed it. Like, I think before the combine and everything, there's a lot of people who had him as like a top three or four running back. But you watch his tape and you see an explosive dude. You see a powerful dude. You see a big play dude. All wrapped into a guy who you knew was small on tape. You knew he was 5'9", you know, 190, 200 pounds on tape. But the testing just didn't show up in the combine. I mean, he ran a 4.55. Explosive numbers were terrible. And just that's just not the guy that plays on tape. And that's a dude who you have to trust the tape on. And that's what I did. I mean, and for me, it's just like we're seeing more and more in the NFL that, I mean, Kyren Williams is a perfect example. He tested horrible. You know, kind of coming in, like it wasn't a dude who was just this big name and great athlete. Like he wasn't a great athlete by any means, but he's smart. He's got good vision. He bounces off tackles. He's a receiver. Like he does all the other things about the position well, other than being a great athlete. And I see that with Bucky Irving. Obviously his size is a big concern, but I feel like the size thing being such a holdup for people nowadays in the running back positions, just kind of outdated because we see so many undersized backs carve out like really big important roles in the NFL. And I don't know if Bucky Irving's a every down bell cow back in the NFL, but I think that, you know, by year three, he could be the most productive back in this class. And again, it's just a guy I'm trusting the tape on. Like I said, I know the testing doesn't say it, but on tape, that guy is an explosive play in a bottle. You know, Jonathan Brooks is a lot of people's RB1 because of the size and, you know, the play strength and all that stuff. But to me, like when I watch Bucky Irving, I watch Jonathan Brooks play on tape, like Bucky Irving runs with more violence. He runs with more body control. He runs with more contact balance than a guy like Jonathan Brooks. So I value that creativity as a runner. I value that contact balance through, you know, through tackle attempts and stuff a lot and running backs. And Bucky Irving just brings that to the table. And then he can be a great receiver too. I mean, his impact he can make in the passing game is a guy who, you know, you don't want him leaving it in pass protection a ton. You know, he's a smaller guy who can get overwhelmed by power, but you put him in routes and you put him against linebackers and, you know, safeties in the passing game on third down. I think he's a guy who can be a weapon in the passing game. So I value that a lot too in my grading scales for running back. So his receiving abilities along with his creativity, explosiveness, and contact balance as a runner, I'm just betting on the traits. And like I said, like this could be something where 2 years down the road, that's one of my big misses in this class, but I got to trust the tape on it and think that he's going to carve out a really nice role in the NFL as a, you know, not a Swiss Army knife, because I think he can do more than that, but a playmaking running back in the NFL.
You know, Connor, I was going to ask you if you like go through your, like your previous draft guides and like see like, you know, how all the NFL players came out or like, who are the guys that you like the sleepers if they ended up something. So
yeah, Shakir hit.
Yeah. And I normally try to go through, you know, again, by the time this, you know, by the time I'm ready to do that, I'm probably working on this one. So that's what, you know, I need to start taking more time and go, but yeah, I mean, obviously I watching the NFL as a whole and not just being stuck on one team, like you always kind of see the guys that you liked on day three or that you put in the sleepers and all that, and you're like, hey, yeah, that guy's doing pretty good. And you know, you always kind of make mental note of it. But I love, yeah, I do need to do a better job of just going back to some of the, you know, because that's what the NFL, you know, that's the cool thing about the NFL, it's really the first round guys, most of the people know they're good, or you know, you can expect them to hit, but it's those day three guys or the UDFAs that you had a bit higher grade on than some other people that you really make you look smart sometimes.
Well, listen, Khalil, we asked you, like, I think it was 2 years, the Zach Wilson draft, I believe it was. We're like, give us a sleeper wide receiver. You gave us Khalil Shakir, and fast forward 2 years, I'm in Buffalo watching the Jets get absolutely waxed by the Bills. Khalil Shakir goes for an 80-yard touchdown by Sauce Gardner. So I go, wow, talk about a full circle moment. But this guide, right, folks? So you get, this is what I really appreciate it. You put down the games that you've watched of these players, too, to add even more context to it. You obviously put the raw score on there. You even give a pro comp, which, you know, is definitely good for obviously just like the common readers. And it really gives you all the information. And sticking with the theme of the guide, a guy that, so me and Lorenzo, we did a mock draft last show, right, where we went through, we did all seven rounds. And a guy that we really debated on was Devondre Sweat, defensive tackle out of Texas. And I go to look at your draft guide. He is not on your top 10 defensive tackles. Take us through that. Why didn't he crack the list? Because he's obviously well talked about, and there's obviously the legal issues now that don't help him.
Yeah, that was some of it. I'm not going to say I hate the player on tape, but I just never saw the hype that a lot of people did. Again, I think he was all, like, for me, I ended up with him at 176, around sixth grade. Like, take the off-the-field arrest, and then the issue is that, like, the whispers were coming out. This was, like, around the Senior Bowl where people started talking about, like, yeah, he's not very mature. Like, he's 380-some pounds, not because, like, it's a choice, but because that's the way he kind of handles his diet and workout routine, and he's not a first guy in, last guy out type of thing. Like, the work ethic, the maturity, the ability to take things serious whispers were kind of coming out early in the process. So, like, if I didn't take into account any of the off-the-field stuff, I probably would have had a late, I don't know, he would have been 130, 140 on my board. Just, you know, let's just say a late fourth round grade or something. So I didn't see a guy that, you know, obviously you see on tape, like, he has a pretty quick first step for a big guy, but it's still slow relative to what you want in a defensive tackle. He's obviously 366 pounds and hard to move at times, but his teammate saw a lot more double teams, combo blocks than he did. So you're seeing a guy that's big. You're seeing a guy that's relatively long, but he got a lot of one-on-one attention at Texas because Byron Murphy was so good and still struggled to produce at a high level to me. So again, like, if you're getting a lot of those one-on-one opportunities, you are relatively quick for your size, but you're still slow and relative what the NFL speed is. I just don't see a guy that can come in. Like, to me, I compare him to, like, a Lucky Fotu that came out along. Like, a lot of people look at him and say, that's Vita Vea.
He's on the Jets right now, Lucky Fotu.
I honestly didn't know that.
Yeah, he's on the Jets. That was our first big free agent signing. Well, we obviously had bigger moves, but that was when we were obviously very sad. But, yes, like, Lucky Fotu is right on the Jets, in case you didn't know.
Okay, gotcha. I did not know that. But I guess a lot of people will say, oh, this is your next Vita Vea, or this is your next, you know, pick your big defensive tackle that's worked out as a run stuffer that can bring a little bit as a pass rush. And I just never saw that. I think he's a guy who's a two down player in the NFL, who's not going to bring you much as a, you know, is a pass rusher. He can be a space eater in the run, but I think he's a guy who's going to struggle to take on double teams because he tends to play high at times. He is a little slower off the ball and relative to what NFL fast snap quickness is. And then when you add in the off the field stuff, it's just like, that's kind of a blinking red flag that, again, the first time I heard he's not 370 pounds because, like, that's how big he is, that's kind of when I got worried, because you don't see defensive tackles in the NFL play at 370 pounds very often.
Yeah, no, that's we don't need another Mekhi Becton situation. I know Jay can agree with that.
Oh, God.
Sticking on the theme of offensive linemen, actually another guy we drafted last week, Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame. We kind of see him as like a third round pick. Like, could Cotton be that swing tackle guy? Like, what are your thoughts on him and how he could be in year one?
Yeah, no, I like Blake Fisher. I mean, like I said, it's a guy who's played left tackle and right tackle in Notre Dame. He comes out of a big time program that develops offensive linemen really well. He's very young. That's another thing that I don't know, you know, how much is being talked about, but he's a redshirt sophomore, 21 years old. You know, I think he's the guy who tends to play a little high at times. He's 6'6". Anytime, you know, you see guys who are 6'6", 6'7", a lot of the times they struggle with the natural knee bend. They struggle with high pad level. He does. But I think he's got the length to kind of make up for some of that at times, kind of keep guys off of his chest. His footwork's pretty good, even though he plays high at times. So he's able to kind of get some good depth in his pass sets. Good mauler in the run game, plays with that nasty mentality that you look for, has some explosive movements to him. I think, like I said, his versatility, being able to probably play the left tackle and right tackle side, is a plus for him too. So, like you said, third round, late second round, you know, I wouldn't hate it at all. He ended with a third round grade for me, 81st overall. So team drafting, you know, 60 that missed out on those top tackles in the first round or something like that, they want to come back and draft Blake Fisher at the top of the third or late in the second. I like it. You know, I think he's a guy that's a little earlier than I have him graded, but we're going to always take third round grades in the second round. We're always going to take second round grades in the first round. It's just kind of looking at the position and the stack you have him in. But yeah, no, a really good player who's got the size. You know, he can probably stand up, put a little bit more weight on. Like I said, 3'10" at 6'6", a little light. I'd like to see him play, you know, a little bit heavier, help with some of his anchoring issues. But he's nasty in the run game, and like I said, he has all the traits that you look for, and the versatility and experience on both sides that you look for. So I think he's probably you know, in that fourth or fifth tier of tackles, which is, you know, normally you kind of go, oh, that's kind of deep. But within this class, you kind of got your first tier guys, your second tier guys, and even some of your third tier guys who are probably going to be top 50 picks. And I think he's in that third or fourth tier after that top 50 that you miss out on a guy in round one and round two, and he's there at the top of the third round. You know, he's a guy that you probably got circled and is one of those blinking lights because of the traits that he has at the position and just the experience he has and playing both sides. I think, is like you said, that swing tackle role can be a pivotal one for NFL teams, especially for the Jets, who have, you know, some aging guys with some injury, you know, issues on both sides.
Yeah. And he, interestingly enough, he was ranked ahead of a guy who has actually gained a lot of steam as even a first round pick, when I haven't even heard this name before yesterday. Patrick Paul, offensive tackle out of Houston, he lands at 106 on your list. Not really buying the whole first round hype around him, or like what doesn't do it for you? Because clearly, I mean, he's ranked outside your top 100, and this is a guy that's being rumored as a top 32 pick.
Yeah, I mean, again, like kind of what you just said, I think it's important to realize too, like just because I have him graded at 106 doesn't, like, I do understand the first round hype, but I just can't get there with him. Like, again, I cover the Cowboys a lot too. Like, Dallas has created some huge roster holes on their team. Like, if all these tackles go before pick 24 and they think, oh, you know, we got a guy who's 6'8", 331 pounds, 37 inch arms, like, you can be talked into the traits there, but then it's like the opposite Bucky Irvin that we were talking about earlier. Like, you turn on the tape and, like, he has good moments on tape, but the rawness to his game, like, I've talked about it with a few other people before, but, like, I've never seen a player with 36 inch arms struggle because his arms are so long. Like, he's so slow to get his arms back in position to strike, or like say he flashes his outside arm, like the time it takes for him to get his 37 inch arms from the strike place back to into his chest to like restrike, reset, refire, like it takes so much time. So like his length is like obviously a strength that you can develop, but right now it's like a weakness for him because his hands are so raw that he throws his hands a lot of the times and isn't able to get them back into the place to like counter rushes. So he misses because of how poorly he uses his length right now. And obviously 6'8" guys, you just don't see many 6'8" tackles that make it in the NFL because they tend to play high. They tend to play with poor pad level. They don't have that knee bend or movement skills that you look for. So he is a pretty good athlete for his size. I'll give him that. But he is a giant ball of clay that needs to land in the right situation with the right coaching, or I think he's like, he's a project to me, and that's just not worth a first round pick. You know, it's if you want to take Patrick Paul at the end of the second round or third round, you know, and try to mold him into a developmental tackle, I can see it. But I just think he's a guy that if he gets thrown into the fire in year one, maybe even in year two, there's going to be a lot of struggles there, which is, you know, I compared him to Brandon Parker, who is another smaller school, just big, long kind of mold of clay that he's played some in the NFL, but it's kind of been rocky at times, and he's had some good stretches, but just, you just, I don't know, like that's one of my I love the RAS score that the Math Bomb does, because I think it's great to kind of see how these guys rank out in terms of their peers. But like, he's gonna get his RAS score looks great because he's 6'7.5" and 331 pounds, 37-inch arms. But like, some of that is a weakness in his game. Like his high pads and his tall structure is like a hard thing he has to get better at. Like, he has to learn to play with the lower center of gravity, lower his pad level, and like drive through blocks instead of standing up tall and just dominating them with length and power right now. Cause the guys he's facing at Houston aren't the same guys he's going to be facing with the Packers at 20, you know, if they take him at 25. So, again, more of a project for me, and that's kind of why I'm much lower on him than a lot of people. But I think most people, I don't know, maybe not aren't as low as him on as I am, but you know, I think a lot of people who do this full time, you know, are kind of like, yeah, he's a second or third round pick, but the NFL is going to value those traits a lot more than some people.
Yeah, and I think like we've seen a trend too with offensive linemen recently, where like it might take a year or two for them to actually live up to that potential or that hype rather. But I wanted to move on to quarterbacks. I think the Jets are definitely in the spot where like they could take a guy in the fourth, or rather in day three of the draft. A lot of names like Michael Pratt and Jordan Travis. I guess like for Jordan Travis, like how much tape did you watch of him like before the injury, and like how much does the injury like play a factor into, you know, his draft status, if you will?
A little bit. I mean, it, you know, I think kind of like I was saying with who were we talking about earlier? Tavondre Sweat, where like his off the field like affected his grade, but it didn't, like that wasn't the sole reason that he was that low. It's kind of the same thing with Jordan Travis. Like, obviously, pretty serious leg injury, probably going to take another, you know, year for him to get back to his normal self. So obviously that impacts it a little bit. I mean, like for a lot of guys that are coming in who were kind of viewed as day two, day three guys, you know, I think there was glimpses of Jordan Travis being a, you know, top six or seven quarterback at times last year. You saw him being able to kind of put that offense on his back and be the focal point of that offense a lot, but just the inconsistency at times was kind of frustrating, just with inaccuracy, ball placement, arm strength thing, which is weird because at times like he just zips the ball so well and you think, oh, this guy's got a cannon. But then there's times where just the velocity on the ball down the field would die on you. The ball placement would kind of be sporadic. And it was tough to tell how much natural arm strength he had, because I was kind of frustrated with the consistency of some of his ball placement accuracy down the field and kind of in the middle of the field at times. And like I said, like when you take the accuracy questions, like the not sure of how strong of an arm he actually has, and then the injury into account, you're like, okay, like, you know, taking that guy in the fifth round as a developmental option is fine. But, you know, I think he's more of a career backup that, you know, might be able to play two or three games for you a year if you need to and keep you somewhat competitive. But like I said, there was at points this year where people were talking about him being a first round pick. And I never could get there because of the inconsistency. And then when the injury happened, it's just a tough thing to really bet on, because there just wasn't a whole lot of consistency from his game. And he doesn't have like that natural, I mean, again, like I think Spencer Rattler's even gotten a little overrated in this process, but like he does have natural arm talent. Like you can watch him just flick his wrist and the ball just travel and pop. And you can see that and go, okay, like that dude's got some natural arm talent. Like we can see why he was so highly touted coming out of high school and his first few years in college. But you saw glimpses of that with Travis, but there was a lot of inconsistency, and there's some questions on, especially now with the injury, how much he'll be able to create out of structure and out of the pocket. And, you know, those are some of my concerns. Like I said, you can't win in the NFL nowadays if you can't consistently create out of structure and out of the pocket. And with the injury and then just some of the natural arm talent concerns with Travis, it's kind of like, yeah, if we need to get a backup in here in round five. But you mentioned Michael Pratt. Like, I think he's one of my favorite developmental starter guys, probably more of a career high-end backup too. But if you're drafting a guy, you know, in the fourth or fifth round to develop and maybe develop into a quality, you know, mid to low end starter, I think he could probably bring that to you more than anyone. And then if Spencer Rattler, guy we just mentioned, if his head's on straight and he's ready to compete, you know, he's small, he's not very athletic, but man, the guy's got arm talent. He showed this year to kind of create off structure in a really ugly situation at South Carolina. He's probably my favorite guy to bet on outside of the top five or six guys that you could bring in and develop into something, if he lands in the right situation with the right coaching staff.
Yeah, Jets have used two top 30 visits on both Pratt and Travis. So I think there's a good chance that they select a quarterback. But I wanted to ask you about the wide receiver class, because how deep of a class is this to have Malachi Corley outside the top 10? He's your 61st ranked player, so it's definitely no slight against him. So I guess it's kind of self-explanatory, but is that more to do with the class being so deep as opposed to a guy like Malachi Corley? I saw Troy Franklin was outside the top 10 too. It's another guy that was who's ahead of Corley on your list. But I mean, we could really be looking at a class where we talk about it years down the line, where there's wide receiver twos getting drafted in like day three of the draft.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this class is crazy. It's by far the best class I've ever like evaluated and scouted and, you know, put rankings and grades on. Yeah, I mean, Malachi Corley is a guy that I do like. I think he has a lot of value in the NFL in today's league. I joke with a couple of the buddies I talk to all the time, but like, he's really not a receiver. He's kind of just like an offensive playmaker because he's so raw as a route runner, and he really lacks nuance as a route runner right now. I mean, it's kind of a lot. Like, you saw it at the Senior Bowl. Like, he came in trying to prove that he was a better route runner, and he created some separation at the Senior Bowl, but it was against one-on-one coverage and, you know, one-on-one drills, you know, where he's able to just go up to a guy and push him off of him and then run a slant. So like, I don't have issues with him doing that, but when you ask him to run a full route tree and kind of do the nuanced things as a wide receiver, as a route runner and separator, and just some of the head and body movements that you want to see at the top of routes and coming in and out of breaks, he really lacks that. But if you need a guy that you can just put the ball in his hand and let him create, I mean, like, again, you're going to see him compared to like Deebo Samuel a lot. I don't think he's quite that caliber of guy, because I do think coming in, Deebo Samuel, like, you saw him run a full route tree in college, and you saw him like be able to separate as a route runner without just pushing off of guys. And I don't think, like, I compared him to LaVisca Chenault, which I think is more of the caliber of player that he's going to be early in his career. Now, if he's able to develop some of that nuance, grow as a route runner, kind of figure out how to use his body, hands, headgear a little bit more as a route runner to kind of create some optical illusion in the route, I think that he can be a much higher caliber player than LaVisca Chenault. But I think he's a guy that's going to be heavily used in screen packages and the slant game, out of the backfield a lot. Just a guy you want the football in his hands and let him create after the catch, because he's been so good at that. Really good dude, you know, forcing missed tackles, running through tackles, angle breaker. I mean, like I said, I think, you know, he's a really good athlete, just as a power, speed, explosive dude, who I think has a useful value in the league. It's just not, you're not going to put him out at X receiver and go, hey, run the full route tree and, you know, dice up the corners. That's not what you really want to do. You just want to find ways to get the football in his hands and let him kind of do damage as a ball carrier.
Yeah, and actually another guy I wanted to discuss was Brian Thomas. I know you have him fourth on your list. This, and like Jake said, like, this is a really talented wide receiver class. So I know there's been a lot of rumors of like the Jets liking him, potentially trading back. Like, what do you see from him?
Love Brian Thomas. I think, again, like some of the stuff I was just talking about with Corley in a different version with Thomas, he lacks the nuance. He's not a guy who's going to just run the full route tree. Like, I think his short to intermediate game is going to need a little bit of time to develop, but he's a guy that, you know, you got Garrett Wilson that's able to just dominate as a route runner and kind of make explosive movements and plays in all levels of the field, where Brian Thomas can just be in year one. Brian Thomas is probably going to be your bona fide deep threat. You know, you're going to throw him go balls a lot. That's probably going to be 70% of his production in year one. But he's got all the athletic traits, all the size that you can really dream of to kind of develop and turn into a better route runner, which is really the only thing he's lacking in his game, is just he lacks some of that nuance that we were talking about, like with Corley, just how to sink the hips, how to get in and out of breaks, how to use his body and head to create the little, you know, differences in separation that he doesn't have right now to his game. But he's got all the athletic upside. He's got all the, you know, body movement and control to kind of do that stuff. So I have no issues in him developing that, you know, throughout the first couple of years in his career. Like I said, I think Thomas is going to be a really good pro receiver in the NFL. Just you talk about rare size, rare athletic traits. Those guys normally work out. It's normally the guys, you know, you'll see a lot of people say, oh, the big fast receiver doesn't really work out, but he's big, fast, explosive, and he put up college production, and he's got pretty reliable hands, and I think he can win in the ways that he won in college, where it's stretching the field vertically and making impressive catches down the field. So he's not in that Kelvin Harmon body roll to me, that where he's, you know, this big, you know, straight line fast, but kind of lacks explosiveness and twitch. I think he's got all those traits and can use his big body and, you know, fast straight line speed to add to areas of his game that he already has. It's just developing some of that route tree and route nuance to kind of dominate the short and intermediate like he does the deep.
My last question to you in terms of the positional groups is the safety position. We haven't really spent a ton of time looking at safeties. The Jets could definitely use another safety. They just brought back Ashton Davis. They obviously lost Jordan Whitehead in the offseason. They re-signed Chuck Clark, so they're definitely looking for another safety. Who in this group, Connor, do you think is – the Jets aren't looking for, like, a guy that can be, like, that hybrid safety linebacker. They're looking for more of, like, a ball-hawking free safety. Who, in your opinion, who's, like, one of the best coverage safeties, one of the best center fielders in this entire draft that can really, you know, have elite coverage skills right away to get on the field?
So in terms of, like, center field covering back-end range guy, like Kalen Bullock's the guy you're looking for out of USC. I mean, his ball production, ball skills is really good from that center field spot. Tyler Newbin, you know, he potential guy who's been rumored to maybe go in the first round. Like, he's a great center field free safety too. In terms of, like, coverage guys that you could maybe line up, you know, in the slot covering in the nickel, like Javon Bullard and Tyke Smith are two guys who I really like. They're my safeties two and three. Tyke Smith, I mean, and Javon Bullard, but Tyke Smith might be, like, one of my favorite players in the draft, not best, but just, like, a dude who I think is going to have a really good career in the league. Another guy who's undersized, you know, I think he's 5'10", 200 pounds, but just an absolute bulldog on the field, like, covers well out on the nickel. You know, for a 5'10", 200-pound guy, like, he comes down in the box and makes forceful tackles against the run, can cover, can run, can hit. He kind of checks all the boxes. He's just 5'10". But we've seen, you know, so much, like, you don't have to be this overwhelming long or big safety to have a lot of success in the NFL. So Tyke Smith's a guy that I'd bet on is, like, your – I know you said that's what you're looking for, but versatile guy who can kind of play multiple, wear multiple hats in a defense. I think he can do that. Kalen Bullock and Tyler Newbin are your two just free safeties. Bullock's a, you know, I hate to say liability because I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but he has a lot of work to do against the run. I mean, he's a light frame, not a very reliable tackler, just lacks technique as a tackler right now. So he's not going to bring you much as a run defender. Tyler Newbin's kind of your do-it-all guy, can come down, fill the alley, can make plays in the backfield, can blitz, can cover, can, you know, take the ball away. He kind of checks all the boxes, just not a great athlete. He didn't test very well at his pro day. And he wasn't, I don't think he was, like, a liability as an athlete on tape, but he wasn't a great athlete on tape, but I think he tested worse than a lot of people thought. So that probably hurt him a little bit. But I mean, we saw with Kyle Hamilton a couple of years ago, like, you don't have to be an elite athlete to come in the NFL and make a big difference at the safety spot. So Newbin's probably he's my top ranked safety and the guy that I'd bet on having the best career, but Javon Bullard, Tyke Smith are two guys that I really like. And then if you're looking for that center field free safety that might go, you know, on day three or late on day two, Kalen Bullock out of USC is probably my next favorite guy.
Cool. And Connor, thanks again so much for coming on. And folks, if you haven't bought a draft guide, go buy a draft guide. It is really tremendous. Connor put a lot of hard work, like he always does every single year, at C Live's the NFL draft, correct? The X handle, I think it is now.
It's Connor. I think it's just Connor NFL draft, but I haven't said that on a podcast in so long since our SB Nation got shut down. So I haven't said it on a podcast, but yeah, it's just at Connor NFL draft.
Make sure you go get a copy pinned in the profile. Connor, fourth straight year on this program. Can you believe it? And Zach Wilson, how fitting, right? First time we have you on. We talk about Zach Wilson today. He's out of our lives forever. And you know he's starting this year at MetLife Stadium, right? It's going to be like a random Thursday night game that nobody cares about, but just I'm ready for it. But thanks as always, Connor, and I'm sure we will be talking to you about how the Jets do this draft. It can't get much worse than last year as far as the first round gets, but hopefully better this year. Hopefully every other year we have a good one, but thanks as always, my man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on. Always enjoy it.
Of course, and we will catch everyone on the next one. After the NFL draft, to recap the whole thing, as always, go Jets.